Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Boys. Yeah. Hold on, hold on. Hold on. We them boys. Hold on. We them boys. Hold on, hold on, hold on. We making noise. Hold on.
Welcome to the Hustle Sold Separately, episode 33. I am stoked. This is just getting more awesome every week. I'm Matt Gottesman, founder and editor-in-chief of HDFmagazine.com and HDF Magazine on Instagram. I'm here with our lovely producer, Wendy West. Wendy, what up?
Hello.
We also have a special guest host today. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm here with the awesome Case Kenny out of Chicago. Case, what's going on?
What's up? Thanks for having me, of course. Yeah, Case Kenny from Pursuit, Pursuit.com, episode 33. And this is, I say it every time, but this is going to be a great episode. And I always try to find things that I relate to very well in our guests. And today is no exception to that, as you know, our host has so much going on. But one of the things that I find particularly interesting is he comes from the same stone that Matt and I do, and that's digital advertising and media. And over the past couple of years here in Chicago, I've worked at a variety of digital marketing companies, ad agencies, and you know, our guest today has a firm foothold in that. So we're excited to talk about that. And even more so today, kind of excited to build on a theme that has emerged over the past couple episodes. And that's the theme of juggling multiple endeavors, multiple, like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a dozen endeavors at the same time. So whether that be, like I said, multiple endeavors or maybe one endeavor in a 9-to-5, that's kind of emerged lately. And that's something that you'll see in a second when we introduce our guest is very true for him. So we're excited for that. We're going to hop right into it. But before that, just a quick reminder that if you haven't subscribed to our podcast in iTunes, please do. It's a great way for us to connect with you, and it's a great way for you to seamlessly get these episodes straight to your iTunes. It's very easy. Just go back to the home screen and select subscribe. It's easy, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, that's true, Case. So today's guest is Nick Mazurkis. We're gonna talk a little bit about some of his current endeavors, and his background is incredible. We are also very fortunate. We have a guest, a special guest host with us. I like to call her the Conscious Hustler because that's one of her brands, one of her several brands, Jen Hoodie. Jen, say hello to everybody.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for having me, yeah, Matt and Case.
Yeah, Jen is awesome. Jen, yeah, so it's nice to have, you know, an additional host. So she might throw out some questions at Nick. And look, we know all about juggling a lot of tasks, whether it's in one venture or in several ventures. And so today's guest, Nick, is really... I think the embodiment of being able to handle so many different things at so many different stages of his life, and we're going to learn a lot from him, and you know, and it's really exciting. So he's going to talk to us a little bit about his journey, and I know Case, you're going to talk a little bit more about that journey here in a minute. And you know, how do you handle multiple ventures at one time? And you know, maybe he can give some tips to handling multiple tasks. I know as we continue to grow, we can always keep learning from the greats that have come before us. And then also, you know, when you're deciding to do new ventures and business, what are some of the reasons that you have for going into them in the first place? So Case, there's going to be a lot going on here in this episode.
Yeah, let's do it. And it's funny, right before the show, we were talking about how to very shortly introduce Nick because he's got so much going on. So here's my 1 minute introduction of Nick, and then we'll hop it off. So simply put, guys, Nick is a serial entrepreneur. And he's also the founder of Union Square Media, which is what I was referencing earlier. It's a digital marketing company with offices all over the U.S., Austin, Boston, Los Angeles, New York City. So excited to talk a little bit about that. We're also excited to talk about how he met his co-founder of Union Square Media on the Tyra Show about 10 years ago. So that for sure makes for an interesting story. So we'd love to touch on that. Nick is also the founder of the People Search industry. So he created the first ever People Search service on the internet. So we definitely want to talk about that and how that was really a game-changing experience. You know, I saw a couple of his segments on 60 Minutes and all this great stuff. So definitely want to touch on that and how in the field of technology and communications, Nick was really a true trailblazer in terms of that and early web development and wireless technology. So we're excited for that. Oh, and on top of that, Nick also created the number one paddleboard maker worldwide. That's SUPATX, S-U-P-A-T-X, for stand-up paddleboard. which is awesome. And I'm sure you guys have I've seen a bit about that. It's a very popular sport. So clearly, Nick has got a lot going on. And actually, I didn't say it, but he has started 18 businesses to date. So you could see how that kind of fits in with our theme. Lots to chat about. We got 30 minutes. So, Nick, thanks for coming on the show.
Is that all?
Wow.
Thanks so much for having me. I told you I have had the opportunity to listen to a few of your podcasts, and I found them really entertaining, useful, and the vibe is great. Love you guys.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. You're a perfect fit for us because you've got so many great, unique experiences across a variety of industries. So your journey is a long one, and I'm sure there's many phases that we'd love to talk about. So why don't you just tell us about maybe describe your journey as succinctly as you can. The first, how you got from starting your first business to your 18th business, and kind of some of the steps along the way there.
Well, as is widely accepted, I mean, generally, you know, an entrepreneur, you're born an entrepreneur. It's not that at some point I crossed a threshold and decided I think I want to try entrepreneuring. It's something that I just had done even before I started my first actual, you know, quote unquote businesses. I was always figuring out some way to create a cash flow, even as early as in elementary school. So it's really something that's been just second nature to me and never been a threshold that I had to cross or a big delta to have to leap to get started. It's just something, you know, what I've been really as long as I can remember. The first actual businesses, you know, that I started with real cash flows were in high school. And almost all the businesses that I've started to date have been self-capitalized. In other words, I start the businesses out of whatever cash I have in my pocket and build the company from there. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why I've had the good fortune to have started so many companies, but yet never had a failure, never had a bankruptcy, both personally or in business, because I operate businesses from the ground up. Out of your own cash flow. So if you're not getting movement, you can't really fail because it requires movement in the business and requires cash flow for it to get going. And if you're able to prove that that works, usually it means there's viability with the business and you can get some traction.
Nick, that's a really good point, is that because you're using the current resources you have, you know, they say like start with what you have, right? I mean, and do you find that because you did that, it had to make you more cognizant and resourceful for how you stick and move and build from there versus thinking like, oh, I might have access to capital. Oh, I have to go get this. I have to go get that. You just started with what you had and went from there. And I think more people need to understand that it doesn't have to be as complicated as a lot of people make it out to be.
Yeah, I focus on the idea. I mean, if I feel really strongly that an idea is good, I've always felt that you shouldn't worry about the capital needed. If you have the right idea, you can figure out a way to get traction and get it started. That obviously doesn't hold true with all cases. Some companies obviously require heavy capital investment. For example, if you're getting into real estate or building, you can't will a building to grow out of the ground. It requires capital. So I've always certainly given that being my approach, I've chosen businesses where generally that works. And so, yes, you avoid a lot of sloppiness and you avoid a lot of mistakes out of necessity, out of survival. You know, I've found in situations where I see with others running companies that are capitalized, or in the very rare circumstances where companies of mine have used available third-party capital, that there tends to be a sloppiness with that. Whereas if you're operating out of your own cash flow, there's really no room for error. That you need to focus on really what works, what is causing a transaction, what's driving the transaction, how do you further those transactions without spending more than what you're bringing in. And you know, all four of my grandparents are all immigrants from Greece, actually. They came to this country about 100 years ago. And they both of my grandfathers started their own businesses. And I refer to those businesses as shoebox businesses, because they would start and operate their business out of the shoebox. The cash went in and they pay their bills out of that shoebox. And if that shoebox went empty, the business was out of business.
Right.
So you had to make decisions on a day-by-day basis to keep cash in that box. Mm. And so that's kind of the general rule that I've always followed, as simple as that is that you just put more cash into the box than what you're spending. And like I said, there's always, you know, some businesses don't allow for that. And some businesses at stages of growth require capital to expand. So I'm not in denial that that's a reality. But as a general rule, as a point of reference to operate companies that way, if you can make it work, it's pretty much proof positive that your model, that your idea, that your vision has traction and a place in the world.
So I think Case's mic might have gone out for a minute, but that's okay. I'm going to actually jump in on that for just 1 second while he calls in. So one of the things that you brought up was that you said day to day. And I think that that's something that's so important. Would you agree that you get a lot of times people say, well, we're going to assess that, you know, in 6 months from now, we're going to do this. And in 8 months from now, we're going to do that. And, you know, all these different things. But at the end of the day, one of the things that I've noticed that has been very helpful is, what do I have to do today to make tomorrow happen?
You know? Right.
You know, and I think if you can talk to me a little bit more about that, like what do I have to do today to make tomorrow happen and then build from there? And then it keeps you a little bit more honest about your business, having to work in that very, you know, day-to-day scenario versus constantly planning for things that may or may not ever happen, such as like real life.
Yeah, certainly, you know, in the way that I described it, it's necessary to focus on today because there wouldn't be a tomorrow if you didn't. You know, it's something as basic as covering payroll. Like, so if you know that you have no extra capital in the bank and you have payroll that's necessary to keep your business going, that's due at the end of the week, it kind of works itself out. You're going to focus on the things that are the exact cause and effect correlation between the actions that you need to take and getting the end result, which is getting the money that you need in order to operate going forward. And I think that a lot of times, as I said, as valuable as capital can be, obviously, in growing a business, sometimes it can be the worst enemy too, because it allows for sloppiness, sometimes laziness, and allowing your eye to take your eye off the ball and not focus on those important necessary for survival, day-to-day tasks that need to be done for ongoing survival and growth.
Nick, let's talk a little bit about, so obviously talking about self-capitalization, talking about the power of the idea and scaling it with that. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, along the way, obviously founding 18 businesses, the people that you've brought on. I know you have a pretty interesting story with your co-founder of Union Square Media, Joshua Keller, and how you guys met. So tell me a little bit about, you know, in starting all these businesses with your own capital and scaling them, how you scaled them with the people you surrounded yourself with.
Well, it always started with just me, you know, for in almost every case. I mean, there's probably a couple exceptions if I rifle through them, but basically it starts with me. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, and any entrepreneur out there knows that it really is a one person show, or in some cases, two or three person show if you have partners, and you expand from there. And I've always said, you know, when you're hiring people and building a team around you, once the company gets to the point that you require others, loyalty, I think, is paramount over all else. Certainly there's really, like, I would take someone who's less capable with the skill set of what I need them for, but is entirely loyal over someone who has, let's say, you know, scale of 1 to 10 level skill sets on whatever the task is that you need them to do, but you can't rely on them loyalty wise. I'll take the person with loyalty over the skill set every single time. That tends to be much more something that can cause problems and be detrimental to your cause than lack of skill set that could be learned if you choose the right kind of person that can learn what they need to learn and follow the guidelines that you provide for them.
Love that. Nick, this is Jen here. And so I checked out your website and learned more about you. And when you say you founded 18 businesses, I mean, so many of these were super, super successful. And so what were, out of all of the businesses that you started, what are some of the consistencies that you've noticed to be true no matter the business? Like some of the fundamentals that you needed to have that you knew, yep, this is one of those businesses that's going to be super successful. Was it the people, the idea, the space that you were in?
Yeah, you know, obviously the circumstances, because I've been in a wide variety of types of businesses. So the circumstances that reflect back, you know, that give you that indication that you're on the right path, you know, the signs along the road to let you know that you're going in the right direction vary from business to business. You know, for example, one of the companies that I'm most proud of that I founded was US Search, which was a people locator service. And as mentioned at the opening of the show, was the first ever people search on the internet. And we became the number one people search service in the world. And that company, in fact, went public on NASDAQ back in 1999. I was proud of that business for lots of reasons, but the most important one being that just the sheer positive impact that it had on millions and millions of people's lives by reconnecting them in very meaningful ways. You know, people who fought together in the war, who hadn't seen each other since the battleground, you know, since being on the battlefield, and, you know, fathers and daughters and, you know, cousins and family members, you know, able to connect. It's funny thinking about it now in 2016, but at the time that I started that company in 1993, there was no such, I mean, forget no people search on the internet. There were no people search services, period. Right. So it's kind of funny to think about that now, but literally when I started that, there was no service available online, offline, or anywhere else to find somebody. Your only opportunity was pretty much go to your local library and flip through the white page phone directories and hope for the best, which is like literally a needle in a haystack, or hiring a private investigator who didn't have, who typically prior to that didn't have much better resources than even that to go on. So it could be extremely expensive undertaking for people to try to find someone then. So to facilitate it and be very affordable and easily accessible to have allowed so many millions of people to connect, you know, was very meaningful to me just from the standpoint of that, not to mention the success story of the business itself and making it all the way to NASDAQ and starting as a self-capitalized one-person company. I started literally as the first employee out of my apartment. I was living in Beverly Hills in California at the time and started as the first employee, and it made it all the way to its IPO without any outside capital. And at the time, of the IPO, we had 400. It had grown to 400 employees.
That's incredible.
But as I mentioned earlier, when I talk about, you know, about starting things self-capitalized, U.S. Search is actually a perfect example for that. And to answer your question finally about, you know, some of those indications that, you know, of what's working right. I knew that there would be, my gut instinct told me, and I was very confident that if you could make a low cost alternative for people to locate one another, accessible to the public, that it would just work. So the question is, well, how do you do that on a grand scale, starting with no capital other than literally I started that company with $800. And so it's a matter of coming up with the right idea, but then figuring out a strategy that will allow you to test it in the real world to see if there is traction. And what I did in that case was I started with a three-line classified ad. Sounds like an infomercial. A three-line classified ad in Entertainment Weekly magazine back in 1993 saying, call this number, 1-800-US-SEARCH, to locate a long-lost friend or family member for $20. And then I got enough traction just from that, but then I just, at the time, sounds silly now, but faxed around to all the producers of the daytime talk shows like Jerry Springer and Sally Jesse Raphael and all the other ones that were so popular in the early to mid-1990s and said, I can provide reunions for your shows, and got some bites. And then finally answer your question, when we got on the first show, which was the Lisa show, and provided some reunions, and she and I was on the show and gave out the telephone number for the business, we got 20,000 phone calls off of the one mention in passing of our telephone number. So it's like finding the right way to get the distribution that you need to get the word out there, and then seeing what the actual reaction is. And that to me was clear indication in that case that my gut instinct was right. And in fact, I grew it from that point forward all the way, like I said, up to 400 employees without getting outside capital to get it to that, based purely on the energy read from that experience.
Wow. I think that's so unique nowadays, considering how companies are funded. But I mean, I think that's a really good reflection of the way that you've grown your various companies, you know, hustling to get that validation and marketing and taking advantage of those moments. So I'm curious, taking it a step further, and if you've listened to any of our previous podcasts, you know that Matt and I and Jen are working on lots of different ventures at the same time. So I'm curious, and this is a theme that comes up time and time again, especially with people maybe who are juggling a 9-to-5 and a venture, or maybe just someone who has their hands in many ventures. How in the world did you manage all of them both efficiently with time and also effectively? How were you effective across all businesses as you were running multiple at the same time?
Well, you know, I'm a huge believer in timing in regards to almost everything. So it's never so much I think, oh, you know, I have two or three businesses going, I think it's time to start another one. I start businesses when the idea comes to me of a viable business and the timing is just right for it. When those two things cross, I go for it. So to answer your question, how do I do it? Well, it's made a lot easier when you're launching the right idea at the right time because you have the wind behind you rather than swimming upstream. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, the good old, you know, take it back to the basics of a hardcore gut instinct of knowing when to start a business and how to put it into the marketplace. So I've never not started a business because I thought I have too many going. I start businesses or don't start businesses based on whether or not the idea is really good, it's the right time to put it out there, and I have some vision for how to throw it out there, referencing back the example I gave about US search and how I could see, you know, testing it. If those three things line up, some variation of that based on what the idea is, I go for it, whether I have one business going or five businesses going. That's what makes the decision. So as far as how I manage them all successfully simultaneously, like I said, obviously a lot of work. You guys know that, and I think all the listeners know that too. It's crazy long work, and there's no separating the work from life. I mean, you're just working 24/7 when you're sleeping, you're dreaming it, when it's all you think about. Yeah. But it's made a lot easier, you know, when you launch off at the right time and you have the wind at your back.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. we don't sleep. We really don't, yeah. You know, but another great thing that you said that I really like is about knowing when to go into the market. And this will actually tee up the next question I want to ask you about USM. And it's that, you know, like Case and I, when we first, each individually separately, before we knew each other, started our online publications and seeing where content and influencer platforms and content platforms are going, we had a lot of people who were like, oh, that doesn't make sense. We're like, I'm not really sure you understand what's about to happen here. And of course, we just shut our traps and went to work and started building them. And the other thing that you brought up, so what you did for distribution during the 90s and getting on that show and then getting the 20,000 calls is no different than today's way of having your own distribution channels and your own owned media, which I try to teach many different firms out there and companies why you need to own your media. And so you're in it. Union Square Media. I want to know a little bit more. I know we all want to know a little bit more about that. I mean, you guys are doing a lot with platforms and content and advertising and distribution channels and marketing. So you clearly see the direction that's what's happening with all of the internet, well, you have for a very long time, but I mean, so I'd love to get a little bit more of your take on both, you know, talk to us a little bit about Union Square Media and then also just where you see what's happening with content and media and distribution and channels, multi-channel marketing.
Okay, great question. If you want, I'll start with how Union Square Media started, not only because it's an interesting story in and of itself, but also ties in, I think, with your question, the previous question and answer, which was the timing of when to launch something. Because a lot of the ideology and methodology that we've built into how we've created Union Square Media has been on my mind as something that I could be doing or be involved with as a standalone company, you know, going back pretty much my entire career. But I never launched it, a company to do those things until the right set of circumstances came about. So if you'd like, I'll tell a little bit about the how it started with my partner, Josh Keller. Because I think it's poignant for this. Would you like me to do that, or do you want me to just discuss what Union Square Media is?
No, I mean we've got about 5 minutes left, so yeah, let's dive into it and just kind of go from there.
Okay, the year that YouTube started, you know, obviously it you know came out with a bang, and there was a you know you realized like you know the disruption that it created, and there was in that first year there was a whole set and you know of the first round of you know YouTube celebrities. Mm-hmm. YouTube stars, and I was following it closely because you know I've always kept my finger on the pulse of what's happening with technology and marketing and how the internet is changing and evolving and how you know there's one big ecosystem, how that all impacts everything going on and evolves it. And kind of I think the trend tends to be that you get a lot of attention on something right away, like YouTube became everything, and then it finds its you know long-term place with all else that's going on. And I mentioned that because I'm going to touch back on that in a few minutes. But so following that and just kind of seeing what was happening in YouTube in those first few weeks and months that it had launched, I saw that there was this contest that they had going with, I believe it was Sprint Wireless at the time, looking for an unsigned band. And so, you know, one of the things that we didn't touch on in this interview yet, but a lot of my background, especially prior to technology and internet, although it did overlap for a number of years as well, was in the entertainment industry generally, and specifically the music industry. And I had been pretty much on every side of the music industry, from being a producer, promoter, band manager, pretty much had a record label, pretty much every side of the music industry, except as a performer. And even though I've always played guitar pretty much my whole life, I never really aspired in front of people. It was always just a hobby for me. So when I was when I saw this this contest that YouTube was running to just draw some attention to YouTube, looking for an unsigned band, I thought, hey, it would be really cool to use this new technology itself, YouTube, that is, to create a virtual band, like what we ended up calling is the world's first internet band, which I ended up giving the name Clip Bandits. Because I gave myself the name Clip Bandit because I would take other musicians' video clips, project them on the wall, play guitar solo along with them, create a video from it, and post it on YouTube. And that in and of itself got a lot of traction. And I thought, I'm going to create a whole band this way. So I randomly found three other people, a drummer, a bass player, and a guitar player singer. I played lead guitar, but found an acoustic guitar player singer, where I basically reached out to them through YouTube and told them I want to create a video and enter this contest. And it just long story short, I mean, as short as I can make it now, I ended up recruiting three other people, we created original music by me taking their individual video clips and overlapping them and creating original songs and creating videos from all that. And it got so much traction on YouTube that we got huge of media attention, not just online. YouTube put us on the front page of YouTube for or 3 days. And then we start in Good Morning America and ABC World News and Tyra Banks Show and countless other media outlets jumped on it because it was an interesting twist and use of this new technology. So the Tyra Banks Show invited us to come on and meet for the first time. We didn't know each other's names. We didn't know each other's where each other lived. We knew nothing about each other except each other's YouTube handles, our YouTube usernames. We walked onto the stage of the Tyra Banks Show and performed one of our original songs. And it just so happens that the lead singer that I had chosen, who played acoustic guitar, was his YouTube username was Jay Peso, but that turned out to be Joshua Keller. And that's where we met on the stage of the Tyra Banks Show. It's the first time I had ever performed in front of anybody, not to mention a national TV audience. And it's the first time I ever played with other musicians in the form of a band. And it was all on TV. And that's when Josh and I met, literally walking on the stage, performing. And then afterwards, obviously getting together and laughing about what a hoot that whole experience was. And then learning more about him, decided, hey, you know, given the strengths that he had, that you talked earlier about surrounding yourself with the right people, and the thoughts that I'd had for a number of years about how to create a digital agency to provide the kinds of services that we provide for people, that's when the perfect confluence of people and ideas, and then with some vision of how we can launch it in the world, kind of came about. And that was the launch of Union Square Media. And that was, we didn't launch the company until a couple years later, but we started working together right away. And that was, 10 years ago now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's Case and I, we met on Instagram.
Oh, did you?
Okay. You did.
Yeah. It's funny when Josh and I are in business meetings and people ask, well, how did you guys meet? Like, oh, we were YouTube buddies. Yeah. it's a long story to explain to people. You know, we actually met on the stage of the Tyra Banks Show performing live in the band together, and we'd never met before. It's never a quick story.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's just a cool reflection of the way that technology can both bring people together and help them scale their ideas. So normally we wrap up with a hustler thought of the day, but honestly, you kind of basically talked about what we were going to say about technology and the need for a website.
Absolutely.
So we're kind of going to wrap it up from here, but thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience. I think it has a lot of value to see the different ways that I think the whole concept of self-capitalizing is very unique. And I think particularly amongst my generation, millennials, I think sometimes we put the cart before the horse. And try to skip those layers. So I think that is very unique and very interesting. And I think hopefully that'll get some people to inspire them to think a little bit differently. But thank you, Nick, for coming on. Matt, of course, Jen, our special guest. Thank you for being here and asking a great question. But thank you, Nick. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. We really appreciate it. Jen, thank you. Wendy, awesome job as always. And Nick, you've got a lot. We'll make an hour special for you. But I think we should have an hour-long special with you and just talk about, you know, probably the next 10 ventures.
Okay, so, anytime. Just let me know. I'd be happy to pick it up. And
excellent, excellent. I'll be sure to stop in next time I see you or next time I end up in Austin. So
great.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, guys. So for that, for episode 33, we're out.